Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'm looking forward to chatting with you and our guest tonight, actually our crew tonight. We don't have a guest for you because we're going to be talking about some of the weather patterns and some of the tropical update that's going on. And then it's going to be a shorter episode tonight, and we're going to do a second kind of part of this episode over the weekend to release for you. So since we've got a potential hurricane impacting the Gulf Coast of the U.S. in the coming weekend. But we can't do any of that yet because we still haven't brought Sam on the call. So, hey, Sam, how you doing?
Hey, Jamie. Well, we thought we'd get some rain here in our part of Colorado, but it doesn't look like we will unless the clouds come back, which they very well may.
Still under drought condition out there, I guess?
Yeah, there's something going on in the plains, apparently. Some pretty severe weather, I guess. Maybe Kyle Nelson can help us out on that.
Right on, Sam. Well, hello, everyone. Kyle Nelson, a.k.a. The Weather Squatch, back with you again for this glorious episode. Sam is absolutely right. Just in southwest Nebraska, northwest Kansas, and parts of the Midwest as well are getting a few rounds of some slightly severe weather here this evening as we record, but definitely a lot to talk about with regard to historical severe weather in the last week that has befallen some parts of the United States.
And that's one of the things I wanted to touch on. We were hoping to get Dr. Joe tonight to talk about Tennessee, his state, and the severe flooding, you know, including several deaths and strange stories of houses floating away and all that nastiness, which is not a place you usually see it. But one of the things I've seen that I haven't had time to really study was that this kind of really severe flooding is more likely to happen again. Do you want to talk about that, Kyle?
Yeah, absolutely, Sam. And what we're really hinting at here and what we're really trying to focus on is that the fact that rainstorms and especially heavy rainstorms like the storm that Tennessee experienced this past week have become more common and intense over the land, especially since the late 1950s. And that's according to observations. So that's real world data that we have from all of our different observational networks for everything from space-based to ground-based, human reports and everything there in between. And while we can't attribute any one particular event only to global climate change, global warming, right? It doesn't trigger, or climate change doesn't trigger an individual thunderstorm complex on a local scale, but it does make the overall environment, our atmosphere, more conducive or more prone to these types of heavy rainfall events because, the main reason is with increased amount of moisture in our atmosphere from warmer ocean waters and things, we get more evaporation, more moisture in the air. And when that moisture lines up with some other features like it did in Tennessee, like we'll talk about here, that can lead to some truly devastating events.
Yeah, how do we do a drought and a monsoon at the same time? That's a little weird, but it seems to be happening that way. The dry part, particularly in the West. Jamie, you had a question.
Yeah, Kyle, I mean, I've seen the weather reports, the news reports about this rain event and the flooding in Tennessee, and it seems that it came upon the folks there, really caught them by surprise. Was this something that was not predicted to happen, or was this more a case of people just weren't prepared to follow the or didn't get the notifications that there was a warning for severe flooding in these areas?
Jamie, that's a really great question, but one that's there's a lot to unpack with that. It's a fairly loaded question that you just asked, so let's try to break some of that down. The first part of it is that that rainstorm in Middle Tennessee on Saturday was localized, it was hyper intense, and in large part, it was an unexpected event where we, as meteorologists and also our numerical weather models that we use to really key off on some of the potential for things like these localized heavy rainfall events, this was not really something that the model showed very far in advance. It was actually the local weather forecast offices, as well as the Weather Prediction Center, that really started looking at that the morning of the day that the event occurred to say, hey, some things are coming together. And that's why it's so important, right, to not just trust purely model data, but also have that human touch on the weather forecast as well, because those weather forecasters, based on their knowledge and experience and training, were able to say, hey, these ingredients are coming together. We know that this has the potential to really, really go sideways. But that was the morning of the event, right? So there wasn't lots of things like, say, you know, hurricanes and tropical storms and things, right? We can see those coming and forming, you know, days, even sometimes a week in advance before they start to impact land, where here this heavy rainfall event occurred and developed quite quickly. And so it's a combination of that, in addition to, right, it's a communication challenge as well, because not only, right, do we have, you know, this heavy rainfall event in Middle Tennessee doesn't really ring as well as, you know, things like, you know, hurricanes and tropical storms and all COVID and everything else that's in the news cycle. And so just like if some of you remember back to August 2016, the flooding across Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and that surrounding area, right, during a big news cycle with election coverage and everything else, a catastrophic event, you know, several fatalities, but it wasn't a named storm, so it didn't get the big media attention that named storms typically do.
And I think...
Go ahead, Jimmy.
No, I was going to say, and I think that you've mentioned before that this is the reason why it's super important to have a connection to local weather forecasts, because those local meteorologists have a better understanding of not just the weather, but the terrain in their region and things like that. And they can put all those things together to help forecast these types of severe events.
You're absolutely right, Jamie. And the biggest thing that I think that we can take away as a society and as a world going forward is that in the world of a changing climate, with the extreme events becoming more common and more intense, we can't rely on the analogs or on our experience to say, oh, well, right, what I experienced with this last event, or, hey, that thing hasn't happened here, you know, in the past. You know, we can't draw on that to be a reliable source of information to go forward. We really have to be watching what's happening in the here and now.
Well, that's the thing, too. There's so many bizarre kinds of weather in places where they aren't usually found. You have to be ready for anything. And we'll talk a little about that at the end of the show. But first, what's going on in the tropics? We have a new named storm, do we not?
Indeed, we do. This is now Tropical Storm Ida that's sitting south of Cuba as we record this evening. And Tropical Storm Ida now with winds sustained at about 40 miles an hour, give or take, from the latest reconnaissance flight to head through there. And it's forecast to pass over the Cayman Islands this evening, western Cuba on Friday, and then move into the Gulf of Mexico Friday night and Saturday, and approaching the northern Gulf Coast on Sunday. And that's why Jamie was saying at the beginning here, we're going to be doing that special episode, that special recording on Sunday, because there's still a lot of uncertainty as to the exact track of the storm. Some of you that have been watching this very closely may have noticed that that cone of uncertainty, you know, kind of narrowing in and focusing in on a particular area, right? Like, so Louisiana has declared a state of emergency, the governor has, but don't let that lull you into a false sense of security from, you know, other areas in the Gulf Coast. Just small shifts in the exact track of the storm can result in major changes to the impacts you receive locally.
Well, and we've seen with other hurricanes where they think it's going to go, it doesn't end up going. And one of the other questions is it going to be one of these big rainmakers? I mean, I realize we don't know that yet, but is it a big rainmaker? Because some of those storms last year went well inland with some of that torrential rain.
Right, Sam. As you said, it's really too early to tell exactly what those rainfall amounts will be. However, we are, you know, approaching the, you know, our peak of Atlantic hurricane season. We have a very, very warm body of water there in the Gulf of Mexico. And as that hurricane tracks to the north and west towards the northern Gulf Coast, right, that's the Hurricane Center in their latest update this evening was talking about Ida potentially being near major hurricane strength as it approaches the northern Gulf Coast. So they are expecting it to continue to intensify after it moves over western Cuba and into the Gulf. And then it has it's moving into some favorable area for intensifying itself.
Well, a question then, what are those favored things other than warm water? I know that's one of them that might make this a worst case scenario.
Sure. So things that hurricanes or tropical systems in general that they really do enjoy is, right, Sam, warm ocean water, right? The true, you know, the energy that feeds that storm system. But additionally, areas of low vertical wind shear. So that's vertical wind shear is winds that change speed and direction with height. Hurricanes may seem very menacing when you look at them on satellite, right? That mean looking eye and those spiral bands going out, extending from the eye wall all the way out then to the far outer reaches of the storm. But they're actually very fragile. And if they are moving to an area that has strong vertical wind shear, hurricanes can actually be ripped apart and even at near peak intensity. So it's low vertical wind shear, warm ocean water, and just an overall steering winds, keeping that hurricane moving in a direction and allowing it to persist over that open ocean into the Gulf of Mexico, where those ocean waters are quite warm before it does make landfall. So that's all shaping up for a very challenging scenario for those in the northern Gulf Coast.
Well, I know a lot of these storms, as they come up through the Gulf, end up heading toward the East Coast. Does this look like there might be a chance of that?
Well, right now, and again, this is looking pretty far out in advance, but after a potential landfall, maybe sometime it's during the day on Sunday is what's being forecast right now. The storm looks like it gets picked up by some mid-level weather system as it's coming through after it makes landfall and kind of moving up the Mississippi River Valley to start. But then from there, really southern Mississippi River Valley, I should say, from there, it really remains to see where it can go. But definitely pay attention to the latest information from the National Hurricane Center, as well as your local weather forecast offices from the National Weather Service and your local media for the latest and most up-to-date information, especially for decision makers.
So keep your rubber boots handy, Jamie.
Oh, for sure. And you know, as we see these storms hit the Gulf Coast, it's very common here in the Mid-Atlantic that we expect to get some heavy rain and significant, at least somewhat significant winds, nothing too much, but we get some gusts and we have some hurricane or some tornado watches and things like that that crop up as a result of the storms that are the leftovers of these tropical storms coming through. And I think it's important to remember that these, you know, these things don't have to still be tropical storms, that they still contain a significant amount of energy and moisture, right, Kyle?
They definitely do, Jamie. And once that that hurricane or that tropical cyclone, so all tropical things included, once that makes landfall, there's a ton of momentum in that storm itself, and there's a ton of moisture contained within that system. And so it takes quite a while for that system to rain itself out. And depending on the environment that it then moves into, once it goes over land, right, we don't expect any more strengthening of the storm, but the rate at which the storm rains itself out and starts to lose its tropical characteristics and things, that there's a whole lot of factors that go into that. And so, right, if you remember, right, Hurricane Sandy caused impacts resulting in a federal disaster declaration after making landfall in New York and New Jersey, all the way into Ohio. So that's just one example of, you know, yes, the coastal areas get a lot of that media attention and coverage, But once that storm does make landfall, moves inland, that's now going to impact areas that perhaps have already been exposed to heavy rainfall in days past. And so you're putting now further stress on that environment, the built environment, the natural environment, and the people that live there.
Yes, I was there for Hurricane Sandy, and it was such a mess. I mean, just about everything people owned was out on the curb. Jamie, you have a question?
Yeah, I mean, also last week we had Tropical Storm Henri that hit the New England coast up into Connecticut and Long Island, New York, and into Massachusetts and up into the rest of New England through Maine. It's interesting to look at that, and I don't remember something tracking quite that far north in the past in my recollection, Kyle. Is that something that's that unusual, or is it something that does happen from time to time?
Jamie, I can't recall answer off the top of my head on that one. I'd have to do a little bit of digging for you and circle back. But I will say that, right, like we talked about a little earlier in this episode, where that our historical experiences with that, right, those traditional tracks of, you know, hurricanes and tropical systems and, you know, different types of weather, right, those are being modified and influenced in the background by, you know, global climate change. And so that's really causing us to have some of these storm systems either act or travel or perhaps do a bit of both in ways that aren't so traditional as we might have experienced.
Question. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice. Well, our Becky DePadwin just wrote an article for LinkedIn called Hurricane Preparedness, and it really has some good information in it. I think Jamie's going to post the link on that for you, and we'll put it in our Facebook page. But I want to touch on a couple of things she said about individual preparedness, and you guys can throw in on that. Besides knowing the likely hazards to impact your location, but like we said, anything can happen these days. Do you have the right insurance to cover those hazards? And apparently, flood insurance is not always included in homeowners insurance, as I understand it. What can you do to protect your home and property? I know in the hurricane-prone areas, they will, you know, they have their big pieces of wood that they put up in the windows and so forth and so on. I don't know what else there is. Maybe you guys can throw in on that. Do you have a way, as Kyle said, to get good, updated, and accurate weather information? What if the electricity goes out? What if, you know, your phone isn't working? Having another kind of radio, and Kyle can talk about that, specific to weather, is probably a good idea. If you get evacuated, do you know how to get out? What are the evacuation routes? If you have to shelter, another thing to consider is how the pandemic is impacting sheltering operations. So preparing for that COVID issue as well. Your go bag, that's a whole episode in itself. What do you need to have if you have to pick up and leave in a hurry? Medications, eyeglasses, stuff for your pets and your animals, crates to carry them in. This is just the tip of the proverbial iceberg as far as things you should think about. Kyle, you want to add anything to that?
I think a really important point, Sam, is, right, we a lot of times focus on, you know, the stuff. We want to have, you know, the stuff to be ready to evacuate. If we need to evacuate, you know, where are we going to go? And, you know, supplies now with COVID in mind, if we do have to go to any type of congregate shelters or things of that area or utilize public transportation to reach those types of facilities. But it really comes down to individual decision-making. And I think that's a piece that's really often overlooked. And it's clouded. Our decision-making as humans, right, are clouded by all these inherent biases to which we all fall victim to. And it's really making this a black or white decision on a, do I go and do I not, right? What are your trigger points, right? We are famous, especially here in the public safety and emergency management world, right? We have our you know, in this incident, so something that's approaching, say it's a known hazard and we're working on it, and we draw that line in the sand, and then that hazard reaches the line, and we say, well, I'll take a step back and draw another line, And pretty soon you're out of sand. Right. So, so get that decision, make that decision point. And this is one of my favorite ones to share. You don't need to wait for an official evacuation order to leave. If you don't feel safe where you are, take it upon yourself to keep yourself, your friends, your family safe from the hazards that could potentially threaten you in your area.
Very well put, Kyle. Jamie, thoughts?
Well, I completely agree with that. And I think that, just like we said earlier, listening to your local weather resources and your local emergency management resources on what you need to do and when you need to do it, that also means trusting your own gut and your own self. If you don't feel safe or you're worried about an outcome, maybe that little voice inside is telling you, it's time to move. We see so many images of highways jam packed with people trying to evacuate all at once. And I can tell you just a few hours can make a huge difference in your ability to get to the location you'd like to get to in a certain time frame. So getting out early is sometimes better in an order of magnitude than waiting until that evacuation order and leaving at the same time everybody else is leaving.
Well, you'd see, I'd be looking at people in my rearview mirror, I tell you. You wouldn't have to ask me twice. Any thoughts on that, Kyle?
I think I really agree with what Jamie said there. And one thing that I'll add to it is having a plan for where you're going to go, where your destination is, whether that's with a trusted friend, a colleague, family member, or perhaps some type of lodging that you've secured. So making sure you know where that is, as well as ensuring that now, while you still have the time to prepare, making sure that your vehicle is ready to travel. If you do have to evacuate, fill up the tank now before there's the run on fuel as the storm approaches the coastline or your area. And that way you can be ready to go and not trying to find a fuel station that still has fuel and a line under several hours wait while the storm is starting to make landfall. So think ahead, plan ahead, and just like with any weather hazard, right, know where you're going to go if you're going to evacuate, and have at least two different routes identified.
Well, there you go. It doesn't get better than that. So, gentlemen, that's about all we got for tonight, but certainly we'll be discussing this more in a few days.
For sure. And I want to thank Kyle for coming on and sharing his knowledge. And it's always great to have Kyle here. I know as he gets busier and busier with his different things that he's got going on, we always appreciate when you're available, Kyle, to come on the show. If folks want to follow up on what you're doing, where can they catch up with you?
Well, Jamie, folks can find me on all the social media places under the handle WXKyleNelson, as well as my website, WXKyleNelson.com.
Ooh, that's new. I'm going to have to make sure I get that link in there. Cool. We do want to thank Dr. Joe Holly and the folks at Paragon Medical Education Group for sponsoring this episode, as they always do. Dr. Joe couldn't be on last minute tonight, so we just want to make sure that you know to follow up for all the great resources, educational and training resources that they have available for first responders at all levels, and especially those particularly focused on disaster preparedness. You can find them at ParagonMedicalGroup.com. You can find them at ParagonMedEDU on Twitter. And you can find them, of course, linked on DisasterPodcast.com as well. Sam, where can folks find you?
Well, generally where you can find you and Kyle. And besides social media, certainly on the Disaster Podcast Group on Facebook. and I hope there's going to be some discussion about this. What about you, Jamie?
Well, you can find me under the handle PodMedic in most social media locations. I look forward to connecting with folks there. Also, I will be linking to that LinkedIn article from Becky. That'll be available in the Facebook group. I'll put up a separate post about that, and then I'll also include a link to it in the show notes for this episode at disasterpodcast.com. And as I said, and we've all been talking about, we're going to try to get the group together for a secondary episode coming up this weekend. So watch for that probably first thing Monday morning as we try to give you some updates on what's going on with Tropical Storm and probably then Hurricane Ida. And we'll have those updates for you, as well as anything we know about federal disaster deployments, emergency management information, and things like that, that we'll have available, hopefully, by the time we record that episode. So definitely come back for that. Other than that, Sam, I think that wraps it here.
Yeah, we always love having Kyle on. He's just a wealth of information. But I think what he said tonight makes a lot of sense. Be prepared and don't run out of sand.